Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the FT Advisor podcast. I'm Damian Fantato, digital editor of FT Advisor. Last month marked 5 years since the publication of the Financial Advice Market Review's final report. One of the report's objectives was to close the advice gap, but by some measurements, this has actually grown in recent years, despite the proliferation of robo-advice offerings and banks returning to the financial advice space. And earlier this year, the government was forced to admit that one of the measures introduced by the FAMR to bridge the gap, the pensions advice allowance, wasn't working in its current form and would be reviewed. So what now? Is advice or guidance the answer? And what role do advisors and providers play in fixing the advice gap? With me to discuss this are Keith Richards, Chief Executive of the Personal Finance Society, and Prakash Chandramohan, Strategic Policy Director at Pfizer. Hello both.
Hi, Damien.
Hi, Damien.
So, Keith, we'll start with you, if I may. 5 years on from the FAMR final report being published, do you feel that the advice gap has closed and improved in any way?
The advice gap is likely to have increased, Damien. Although the number of advisors during that period have actually increased, which is a really positive indicator, it's professional advice continues to evolve. And by definition, you're probably seeing more and more professional advisors actually having a smaller bank of wealthier clients. So the bigger issue that we really face is one of the underlying challenges or objectives of the Financial Advice Market Review was to provide access to financial advice at all life stages, and in particular for hardworking people who wanted to do the right thing. So in other words, you know, 20, 30 years ago, the typical age of a client for many advisors probably would have been in their mid-30s, so and definitely in the accumulation stage and a very different sort of need set. Whereas now, of course, you talk to professional advisors and many of them are helping their client bank who are actually in retirement. So they're in the decumulation stage and actively need advice to make sure that their life plans are fully met. So we're likely to have seen that growth. And although the FCA have provided some good statistics, I mean, there are some positive news that came from the FCA's review at the end of last year. I mean, in particular, there is always going to be a propensity towards can advice be bridged by greater simplification, in particular the use of technology. And there is some evidence that is growing, but it's slow. And we know that many of the startups and the robo options underestimated the cost to generate traffic into their websites, the traction for people to be motivated to do something. So, you know, we're now seeing a government and a regulator recognizing the amount of cash which is just sitting idly in bank accounts because people aren't engaging in the process. So I would say, you know, overall, since we highlighted the issue with the Treasury back in 2015 and then the Financial Advice Market Review came out, which was a really positive step. First time government had really been involved in the debate. Prior to that, it always been about contraction of markets to improve quality, if you like. But we are now still grappling with how do we address what is fundamentally an increasing advice gap.
Mm-hmm. And Prakash, where do you see the current lay of the land from your perspective at Pfizer?
Yeah, I mean, a bit like what Keith says, I mean, the advice gap is very much alive and kicking. And we shouldn't really be surprised about that because the key deadlocks are still there. So if you look at sort of before RDR, you know, people got to walk into a branch, you know, speak to a professional. After RDR, you know, banks have to close their direct sort of sales forces. So people have now moved to, you know, social media, friends, family, Google. And so that dynamic hasn't been solved over the last 5 years. You've got the regulatory issues of RDR that forces consumers to pay for investment advice, you know, even if a product is actually not taken out. And you know, people just don't want to do that. And then you've got the issue of product providers who can't provide that personalized support that consumers desire, because of the advice regulations. And obviously that hasn't changed as well in the last 5 years. So yeah, we see we see no real sort of change to, to the advice gap. There's still a problem to be solved.
And Prakash, just to stay with you on this next one, do you think that the solution to this is wider provision of, full fat financial planning, financial advice, or is it a greater proliferation of guidance tools, maybe from providers, maybe from advisors themselves?
Yeah, I mean, good question. I mean, we don't see the advice gap being solved by 40 million people now getting advice who weren't getting advice. That's just not gonna happen. We see the closing of the advice gap, meaning people who are more empowered, making better financial decisions, getting one-off support, and to be able to empower consumers, they do need more help from providers. They do need more tools, more personalized support. These are the things that are scalable. These are the things that can be provided for free. And that's going to be really important to hit the 40 million people who are not getting the support with their financial affairs.
Mm. What do you think, Keith? I suppose from the point of view of some of your members, they might argue, well, why should I give advice to clients who aren't, it's not profitable for me to give advice to?
Yeah, and that's often been cited, Damien, but I passionately believe that the answer is a blended solution. So I think professional advice has a big role to play. I mean, arguably in the FCA's rule book, advisors can simplify their current advice process, but the problem with that is if you try to simplify, you could leave yourself more vulnerable to a future claim of liability, or worse than that, you could leave yourself vulnerable to the FCA deeming that you didn't gather enough data and information to enable you to make a recommendation. So regulation is a massive issue that does need to be addressed. And we are seeing some signs that regulators and governments are realizing that pushing massive burden onto sectors who are regulated, intent on doing the right thing, when actually the increasing scourge that we're all facing is scammers who are unregulated and absolutely out their intent on relieving people of all of their hard-earned savings, is perhaps time to redress the focus of where regulation needs to sit. It's certainly not on good firms that could address some of the challenges of those people who want to engage at an earlier stage. But as you say, for some financial advisors, they've got to balance off the financial cost to operate and the economics of being able to offer advice across a range. Now, I know from personal experience, there are plenty of advisors up and down the country who do. They don't subscribe to having a certain limit, but it's not something you can publish. So they treat every case on its own merits, and they'll simplify based on the merits of the client. That said, of course, we're all using technology more and more. There's no question that the pandemic has accelerated that. I mean, after all, we have now got 80-year-old clients who are now using the same technology as their grandchildren. So in some ways, COVID has created an acceleration of thinking around the use and interaction of technology and how we might engage people more. It's certainly been an intergenerational equalizer. In the sense that we are all now forced to use it for our personal lives. And I think we're going to see that change. So for me, it's about blend. One of the things that is encouraging to see, and it certainly came in the original Financial Advice Market Review, was the recognition that regulation itself can be a massive barrier to stopping good consumer outcomes or allowing or attracting new entrants into the market or existing players to expand their services. So we really must go back to grappling that issue, because otherwise it does force professional firms to continue to focus on wealthier, smaller group of wealthier clients where they can manage that risk and cost aspect more effectively.
Mm-hmm. And Keith, what do you think the roles are for advisors and providers in addressing this issue? Because some advisors might not necessarily be keen to say, well, I can't help you, but go to your provider and they'll give you, this information, because they might think, well, it's it's going to be from a provider, so they might want to sell things. What do you think on that?
Yeah, I think, I mean, there is a point where we must join together. We must join forces. And I think, you know, the point you've just made, I've always felt, Damien, that signposting, if you can't offer a service, we should at least feel inclined to signpost people to somewhere they can. So, for example, we've already got the government services, pension-wise, that will signpost consumers to professional advice where their needs are obvious. What we should be doing as a sector is that we should be signposting people to PensionWise because they might just need some straightforward information and guidance. And therefore, actually, in many ways, PensionWise could well be an added service of a professional advice firm. The question around where product providers sit and even the banks, as Prakash had sort of referenced earlier, they have a key role to play. So regulation has forced consolidation of markets. It has largely addressed many of the issues that regulators saw at the time. It is time for fresh thinking. We can't allow past history to keep clouding our judgment of how you engage public. The FCA issued their financial lives report recently and recognised that 27.7 million consumers are facing vulnerable circumstances due to the pandemic. Over half of the population haven't got the level of financial resilience that they need. Now, that doesn't mean to say that they couldn't have been saving, they couldn't have been building. You know, plenty of people in their early stage of life have a balance between borrowing and saving. What we're not seeing is, of course, people being engaged to understand how they work towards goals and objectives. And it's mainly regulation that's hindering that process. So we must bring the regulator back to the table. It is encouraging that FCA of recent are talking about streamlined advice again. And we've had some very early indicators from the regulator that the exit from the European Union might allow them to think more flexibly about whether or not streamlined advice. My personal preference is we've got to get away from trying to call anything advice. Advice is professional advice, I think, and after that, it's regulated information. And it might be intuitive for consumers to recognise the difference between getting good information that empowers them to make informed decisions versus advice, which is something that you almost certainly pay for as a professional service. So we're now starting to see the regulator at least flex their thinking around whether or not there should be safe havens for people who want to offer regulated information. I'll just give that a term at the moment, Damien. Yeah, I'm sure there'll be much better descriptors of it in the future. But that means that regulated professional advice firms can adopt that as well. So that's why I think there is a blend, and I think professional advisors have a big role to play in that future landscape. But as do the banks and as do the product providers of old. But we do need to put the past behind us and think about how we move forward into the future to address the advice gap.
Sure. And Prakash, what do you think the different roles of advisors and providers are in addressing this?
Yeah. So we think advisors do have a large role to play in getting more people over that tipping point into seeing the value of advice. And I think if they can demonstrate the value of paid advice more, that'll be a good thing for consumers. That they have to address this misconception as well that advice is, you know, for the wealthy. And I think if they start providing more sort of one-off advice services, that will really start really helping, you know, the people in the advice gap, in the middle of the advice gap. But I think we have to be careful not to rely too much on the advice sector, because we know there's a shortage of advisors in the country. There's an aging demographic with that advice population. A lot of advisors are happy servicing the clients they have already. They can't actually fit in any more clients into their yearly schedule. So we think that, yes, the advice sector does have more to offer, but we think that the sectors that really have to come to play here are the product providers and actually fintechs. So on the product providers, they're the ones with the customers now. They understand from the data that they have on these customers what issues they have, and they're able to, if the advice regulations allowed them, they could nudge people into better behaviors, they could filter options for them, they could prompt customers of problems that they have. But these things, you know, they're not really allowed to do at the moment given advice regulations. But if they did provide these sort of services, then people would be more empowered, they'd be more knowledgeable, they'd be able to figure out what the most relevant options are for them. So we think that, you know, there's a big role to play for providers. And then on the fintech side, if you look at all the smart data initiatives going on in the country, I mean, you have open banking that is launched, you've got open finance coming along, digital ID, pensions dashboard. I mean, these are initiatives that are going to allow consumers to be able to see all their finances in one place. And then we're going to have fintechs who can compile that information for the benefit of consumers and, you know, prompt consumers as to, you know, what issues they have, prompt them into, you know, the advice services that they need or the product providers they need to speak to. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of dynamics that are going to be happening over the next sort of 5 years that will really help consumers.
One of the issues that Keith touched on was the thorny issue of the advice guidance definition or barrier. Prakash, do you feel that that's still an issue that needs addressing? Because I remember speaking to providers who said that they were concerned about giving information to their, you know, clients because they were concerned about tipping into that advice barrier.
Yeah, look, it's a massive issue and it really has to be solved. So if you look at the advice regulations, the perimeter guidance rules, it's very difficult to understand, number one. Number two is that if you've got like a product, you know, proposition person thinking of a great sort of support service and they go to their compliance team to say, to ask, you know, whether it's allowed or not. If you look at the FCA rules, there's a way to argue that it's allowed and then there's a way to argue that it's not allowed. And this really creates a, you know, problem for sign-off. You know, the FCA are saying that firms need to take more, you know, regulatory risk. And I think there is a good argument for that. I think that firms have got a bit scared and become much more sort of risk averse. But then, you know, this is a two-way street. I think the regulator and firms need to work together to, you know, figure out what's allowed, what's not allowed, and then for changes in the advice regs to be made that will encourage more personalized guidance, you know, support services.
Cool. And Keith, do you feel, I mean, you've alluded to this already, but do you feel that the advice, guidance, or regulated information, that barrier, is it still not in the right place? Because we've been having discussions about this for years.
Yeah, it's not, Damien, and the, you know, the challenge that we face with big institutions coming back in is the fear that you try to create a one size fits all. So the mis-selling scandals of the past have really all been around a formulaic approach, so one size fits all. And even if actually you deem that 95% of consumers who got a certain product or solution, it was appropriate, it's what about the 5% that may not? And then that ends up with a big redress program. So I think the complexity around simplifying advice, guidance, actually has to be also taken in the context of what does the consumer understand? And we know from countless consumer research that the consumer doesn't actually consciously think of the difference. We know that pension-wise, absolutely focus on and keep reiterating that they're only providing guidance, not advice. But when they get their feedback from the client normally starts with thanking them for the advice. So, you know, we've over the years come up with process that tries to differentiate between full-blown advice and simplified, and we've given it names like simplified advice or basic advice or gated advice, and then actually a surprise that the consumer doesn't understand what the difference is. Because they've got nothing to compare against. So you give them advice, you give them advice. And so I think the challenge that all organisations and all firms have is, you know, it's back to a point of there are different programs out there. There are many IFA businesses or many advice businesses who don't want to come back from the model that they've now developed, and they want to carry on in that niche market. That's different from the bigger issue we're trying to solve here, which is regulation has really created social exclusion, and it's difficult for firms to understand how they can address it without falling foul of retrospective regulatory standards that then leave them with massive liabilities. So many of the fines of the past weren't based on consumers complaining. They were based on a regulatory visit that deemed that processes and systems weren't robust enough, and then firms had to go into a Section 166 or go under a skilled persons, or worse than that, they had to do a review and then offer lots of redress out. So if you're a big organization, that's really scary, because you have to start provisioning for the liability. And let's not forget, many advisors who might listen to this, you know, a big axe to grind here is that there's unlimited liability for regulated advice, unlike other professions. So almost certainly you have to start provisioning against the likelihood that you're going to either end up with a massive regulatory review, which could cost millions of pounds, and offer redress, even though a consumer may never have complained. There's also the other big issue that we're facing in the original financial advice market review. Let's not forget that the number one issue that advisors fed into that consultation that then created 22 work stream or 27 work streams was the FSCS and the issue with a hardening PII market, which of course has been the number one controversial issue for many advice firms. And back to a point that was made earlier, we may see more advisors exiting because of the increasing cost and risk associated with staying in the market. Now, that's a real travesty, because many of them, I suspect, would rather carry on, but actually just feel that it's getting to a point where it's just not financially viable. So I think, you know, this is the time where we need to pull the government back in. We've certainly called for a financial advice market review too, because the core focus of the government was looking at how it could bring the barriers down that otherwise hinder the sector being able to engage more consumers in a way that they want, whether it's through fintech, big organization, whether we really call it information, guidance, or advice. We need the government to get involved and make really clear of expectations, so people have got certainty about how they're going to be treated in the future. That uncertainty stops an awful lot of organizations engaging in the process.
And so is that, as you see it, the main barrier that needs to be addressed, that sort of uncertainty, that liability issue? Because there's no sort of shortage of interest in entering this market. We've seen it with private equity. We've seen it with, you know, companies like Schroders coming into the market, but they're not coming in to necessarily, you know, fill the advice gap. They're coming in to service the sort of people who would typically get advice. Is that liability issue the key issue that needs to be sorted, to the key barrier?
Yeah, it is. And I think, no, it absolutely is. I think uncertainty, you know, paralyzes a lot of us on doing things. You know, we've all been left in situations where we're waiting for a decision. And even if you end up with a decision that you didn't want, you move on from that point. But actually, until you get the decision, you can often be paralyzed in doing anything. And it's very similar with unlimited liability, or have you interpreted the rules correctly? You know, could you fall foul of a subsequent change? Now, whether or not the regulator, you know, the regulator will always say that they're not retrospective, but they always have the value or the benefit of being able to review things with hindsight. Whereas at a point of giving advice, you are giving the best advice or suitable advice based on the circumstances at the time. Things can change, which actually dynamically change whether or not a certain investment fund or solution might have been better than the other. So we've been regulated frustratingly based on a regulator that's got the benefit to review what's happened during a period and whether the solution offered was the right one. The issue that many firms face is they can't be certain that they're always going to deliver perfect. You know, when I was asked years ago, you know, can you guarantee that your company will still be top of the charts when my investments mature, of course you could say no. They change. Investment performance change. It goes up and down, and therefore the position of different companies will change throughout the period. But what we can assure you is that it's a suitable product to meet the goals and objectives you've got. Whether it will be number one or 50th in the chart, it will achieve the goals and objectives. So, but the problem that we face as a sector is we're constantly trying to address perfect, and perfect is often quoted as the enemy of the good, because you can't ever end up, you get advice off two professional advisors qualified to the same level of experience, you may end up with different investment solutions to address exactly the same needs, goals, and aspirations of the client. One will, over time, if you wanted to measure them, probably yield a slightly better performance outcome than another. Does that make the second one inappropriate or bad advice? Absolutely not. So I think we've got, it's a very complex area that gets very confusing, but it is about uncertainty of how regulatory treatment in the future is going to place undue financial pressure or liability on a firm that acts in good faith. So I think that's the bit we're grappling with. I like the idea of, we have called before for a safe haven for things like regulated information or regulated guidance. But I think we're not going to be able to retract back from where we are, because there's no question about it. Professional advice has moved on considerably, and no one wants to see that unwind. So we're in a slightly complex world where we've got some good examples of very good practice and how the world has moved on. What we don't want to do is actually undo all of that by rushing in to provide a solution that may actually take us back several years. So I think it's, as long as we're focused on how we move things forward rather than how we go back, then definitely we'll come up with opportunity. But I think the evident need of consumers absolutely needs to drive policymaker behaviours to support the markets in coming up with the right solutions to meet the needs of the public.
Sure. And Prakash, what do you see as being the barriers that need to be addressed to fill the advice gap?
So the regulatory deadlock, that needs to be solved. And we've talked a lot about that on this call, whereby you've got very strict advice regulations originated from the EU that don't allow firms to provide personalised support services. And you've got RDR that forces consumers to actually pay for advice even if they don't take up a product. And we think that these two regulations mix like oil and water. They don't mix. So we need a regulatory framework that is suited to the needs of UK consumers and suited to the RDR regulations that aren't going to change. So, I mean, that's one thing. The other thing is that consumer behaviours and consumer, the way consumers buy products has changed significantly, over the last 5 years. COVID, the pandemic, has been a catalyst for people going online. And we need a regulatory regime that actually fits with the way consumers now make purchasing decisions. Again, this is very much linked to the restrictions product providers have in terms of providing some personalized support to their consumers. I mean, the analogy that I use is, imagine like buying a car, and then a week later you call the dealership and you want their advice on how to use this car better. And imagine if the dealership said to you, well, look, we can't really give you that sort of advice. You need to pay £750 for that. I mean, it just doesn't work. And that's the problem that product providers have at the moment. They can't provide the personalized support to their existing consumers in the way they want to. So I think that if we do solve this regulatory deadlock, that is going to, that's going to lift a massive barrier in the UK.
Interesting.
Damien, I was going to say it's worth stepping back in time to look at just the key objectives of the Financial Advice Market Review. And it was to look at the extent and cause of the advice gap for those people who do not have significant wealth or income. The regulatory or other barriers firms may face in giving advice and how to overcome them. How to give firms the regulatory clarity and create the right environment for them to innovate and grow. The opportunities and challenges presented by new and emerging technologies to provide cost-efficient and effective and user-friendly advice services, and how to encourage a healthy demand side for financial advice, including addressing barriers which put consumers off seeking advice. These were all worthy objectives then. They are all very relevant now. And I'm sorry to say that the Financial Advice Market Review pointed in the right direction, actually never concluded and addressed those core objectives from its outset. So we've got to pull them back in, and we've got to get the government and the markets and the regulator together to re-examine those and come up with solutions rather than just another set of bullet point objectives.
Well, hopefully we won't be having this discussion in another 5 years' time. great. Well, thank you to Keith, and thank you to Prakash for joining me, and thank you to you for listening, and tune in again next week for the next edition of the FT Advisor podcast.